from Northern California. It's the Penpals.buzz Prison Pen Pal Podcast. Hear real stories from real inmates who want to write to you. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
So if you tuned in yesterday, it was part one of our series on prison relationships, and we heard from Anthony Cloud, who was following up on a call into the podcast a couple of years ago. He had a relationship with Melissa. Everything was amazing. She was his soulmate, and things didn't work out. And Anthony explained some stuff that I think for many people it's shocking. Melissa had convinced him that she was, in fact, pregnant with his twins. She had sent ultrasound images, then photos of the actual twins once they were born. And they were together for 2 years, and everything was pretty much a lie. And now Anthony's just struggling and trying to figure out, how did this happen? Why did she have to lie? He feels hurt. He feels betrayed. He feels sad. He really wishes things would have worked out different. In my mind, I made a diagnosis, even though I'm not a doctor and I have no qualifications. But I said to myself, and I said to Daisy here in the next room, I said, there has to be a higher percentage of people with borderline personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder. They're these cluster B personality disorders. And I said to her, man, we're just seeing too many stories like this. Too many things are happening where the relationship starts out amazing and then just falls apart. Maybe a month later, maybe a year later, maybe in some people's cases, 11 years later. I won't say who that is. But I wanted to get to the bottom of it because my words don't really mean anything, right? Sure, I got experience in this. I deal with pen pals and I deal with inmates. I deal with free world people. Sure, I see a lot of stories. I hear a lot of things, but I didn't get a PhD in psychology, and I just know the things I hear and the things I hear on Facebook and the things I read in books. So what I did, I went out and I found a leading trauma expert, a therapist, and a life coach who's been doing this for over 20 years. She really knows her stuff. She's also the founder of Gratitude and Growth Counseling. It's out of Florida. She's calling all the way across the country. Jennifer Garcia, welcome to the Prison Pen Pal Podcast.
Hi.
I know you listened to Anthony's episode yesterday. What do you think's really going on with these types of relationships? It happens so often.
The first part is, for some women, a relationship with someone who's incarcerated can feel just emotionally safer. The physical distance reduces the likeliness of maybe immediate conflict or betrayal or abandonment. They can't go anywhere, so there's no way to be abandoned. So the relationship feels more controlled and predictable. So that's one of the reasons. I can go into the other ones if you want to.
Yeah, go into one more at least. Let's get this out there. Because I really want to help people either before, during, or after something like this happens, just kind of understanding what's actually going on.
The next one is ideation and fantasy, where, you know, prison relationships often rely heavily on letters, phone calls, and limited visits. And so the partners are not sharing daily life together. It becomes easier to idolize the person. And the relationship may exist more in an imagination than in reality, which can keep conflicts and incompatibilities. So that's another piece that's really important because, you know, when we start idolizing and having fantasies, it really just starts to lift our logical sense of reality of who these people really are. And then we start not looking at the red flags that are happening. So we start to just, okay, well, that showed up. I'm not going to pay attention to that because my fantasy doesn't fit that.
It's kind of the fantasy of like dreaming about, this is the life we're going to have, right? This is, we're going to get married. We're going to have children. I'm going to move to where you live and I'm going to be there for you. Even if you never get out of prison, I'll be there for 40 more years. I'll wait for you. I'll be your ride or die. Are these some of the things people might be thinking or saying?
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of the intense emotional communication, which is the next, you know, one that I was going to go into. The idolization of fantasy leads into emotional intensive communication. So they tend to be very focused, emotionally deep, people writing long letters, talking about their feelings, their hopes, their personal history. And that level of emotional disclosure can create a strong sense of connection very deeply and extremely quickly. these are the realities of how these things begin so quickly and so intensely. They fall into the trap of intense communication and isolation and fantasy. There's low competition and, of course, the biggest one, loneliness and connection. Sometimes a much simpler reason is just two people connecting through letters, social media, or prison pen pal, and develops a genuine, you know, emotional bond and loneliness and desire for companions that can lead people to build relationships in really unexpected places.
There's two people that are lonely and they come together. Maybe for the first time in a long time, they feel they're able to share more things about themselves than they've shared in decades, maybe more stuff than they've ever told anyone. I'm going to share all this stuff with you. And sometimes that oversharing, we think of that as, oh, that's a good thing. They're so open and they're so transparent and they're so able to tell me all of their childhood problems and everything that in their past life and everything else. And we think, oh, this is great. She tells me everything. But that's not always, maybe not always a good thing. What's going on? Like, so you're an inmate and you're sitting in the prison and you're lonely and you get this letter from this woman. What's going on in someone's head when this happens?
When a person is being approached, especially people in prison, you know, they are already very mentally vulnerable and emotionally vulnerable because they're in prison. They're, you know, they have to serve their time. The likelihood that they came from a good background is almost slim to none.
Right. Yeah.
Most of those prisoners have a lot of trauma, anywhere ranging from drug abuse to neglect to physical abuse, emotional neglect. I mean, you know, we're talking the gamut. So when you have a prisoner who is finding people that quote unquote love them, that's a big deal. That activates a lot of parts of the brain that are normally not activated, as,
right,
you know,
yeah.
And it allows for the prisoner to feel that sense of, wow, someone sees me, because no one has ever seen them. The system failed them. Their family has failed them. Their friends failed them. Everything in their life has been one failure after another. And so here comes a person that says, oh, I love you. That lights up parts of the brain that signals, hey, this is great. But because trauma is so deep, the other part of the logical brain just shuts down because the emotion overrides. It overrides the logical part of our brain, like, eh, this is not good. Because there's no emotional stability, they're going to just grasp onto this, even if it sounds wonky.
I've heard people say, you know, a lot of times it seemed like it was too good to be true. You know, I feel like the mental, the brain part kind of almost knows, but you just want to block that part out, like you said, yeah.
Yep, it gets shut down. So that's the trauma part working. Okay, so the trauma part will a lot of times override our logical sense of understanding because we want to be seen and loved. Now remember, these people are basically starved of being seen and loved. In a human condition, that is almost too difficult to even comprehend in their nervous system. It's almost like emotional isolation. So when you're kind of in that space that you just need that consistency of someone seeing you and wanting to love you, it is such a huge nervous system boost that it overrides all things. These people have pasts that are not talked about. And it doesn't really condone the actions that they did. It just means that there's reasons behind why these actions even exist. And I think that's the part where being seen as a human being is a huge thing for them. So the people on the outside also know this. On some level, they are also broken. So they find broken people to manipulate.
Okay.
They find broken people because they themselves don't feel good about themselves. So they're going to attach to someone who, A, can't go anywhere, can't actually like have a relationship with them, doesn't need to have the responsibility of them because they're in prison, and then allow themselves to feel better about lying, about manipulation to make themselves feel good. So they're, in a lot of ways, they're indulging in their own sadistic fantasy. And so they have a man who's usually someone who they can control to make themselves feel secure in their own life. But then they want to build their own imaginary world around them because they're so sick themselves. Borderline personality, narcissism, you have sociopaths, you have, I mean, you name it, it's there.
Yeah.
Women who seek out men who are in prison don't necessarily mean that they're bad and wrong, but the likelihood that they're healthy is pretty slim to none. So the sad part to it is that to connect two people who have a trauma bond is inevitably going to explode no matter how you slice it. Now, do people get married in prison? Absolutely. And sometimes people do find somebody who is supportive, who really does care about them, but that relationship somehow works. But that's not usually the case.
I hear that they work a lot, but then when you check back in 3 years, the story changes.
It's difficult because the outside world has so much going on. And when the person in prison can't contribute, resentment builds, anxiety builds, depression builds, and then they see their friends with their husbands and their boyfriends and whatever else, and they're like, I can't have that. So like having prison relationships is a lot more complex. Is it impossible? No, but it's definitely slightly more difficult because you have to understand where things are in the places of people with trauma.
We hear about trauma attachment, trauma bond.
You know, it goes into a trauma bond is when two people share a perceived understanding of pain, but it doesn't have the element of what an actual relationship requires, which is ability to communicate, you know, anger management, being emotionally available, learning how to cope with stress and not, you know, break down and when things go really wrong in life, that can happen. Jealousy, envy, all of these factors come into trauma. And then when a person doesn't deal with their trauma, that starts to seep into the relationship. But in the beginning of trauma bond is, hey, you understand my pain and I understand your pain. Let's get together. So it becomes, yes, I understand your pain, but who are you as a person? You know, you've got to go one step beyond that. It's like, great, I understand you. You understand me. That's lovely. And who are you? And what do you bring to the table? And what kind of things do you do in life? You know, like, how do you operate? What is the thing that makes you happy or makes you sad? When you get that, what do you do? A lot of people lash out. You know, they get angry. They start to, let's say, do the abandonment. So a lot of people who, let's say, have abandonment issues, they will literally leave and be like, I'm going to abandon you now because I was abandoned in life. Or they'll use it as a weapon against the other person. Oh, this other person got abandoned. I'm going to abandon them now to make them hurt even more. So do you see, like, how hurt now creates more pain? Because now we are both in our traumas. We're both in our triggers. And we're both doing the exact thing that people did to us, now to each other. So trauma bonding is taking our trauma, trauma A, trauma B, putting them together and creating one giant trauma bubble.
What percentage would you guess of people on the streets that, for whatever reason, start Googling prison pen pal, prison relationship, prison dating? Maybe they watched a reality show. Maybe they watched Love After Lockup and they think, that could be me. Or for whatever reason, how many of these people are somewhat mentally healthy?
It's not that people are quote unquote mentally well. It's that how much have they worked on themselves and how much do they still need to before they jump into a relationship? And if they feel unable to handle a lot of things in life and they're struggling, go handle that and then go into a relationship. The percentage is probably a lower percentage because a lot of times people don't work on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people don't seek out therapy. A lot of times people don't recognize that there is a way out of their trauma. They just perpetuate it by trying to get into relationships that make them feel better, which is essentially part of the trauma response.
I think, I mean, one misconception that a lot of inmates have that, I mean, it makes sense. You get a letter from someone who's on the streets in the real world. They have a job, they might have a family, they have responsibilities, and it's easy to just snap to that judgment, oh, this is a normal person, this person can help me because they're not in prison, right? So just the fact that they're not incarcerated, in a lot of people's minds, that's like, oh, this person's healthy and normal. You know, I think they realize maybe at some point that they're not. I know I've had relationships with love bombing happening, and the problem with things like love bombing, for me at least, is you don't know. It's love bombing until things go bad, because initially they're telling you all these great things. They're sending you gifts. They're doing what they do. And you're just thinking, man, this person's really into me. This person really cares about me. there. I've never had someone that gives me such nice things. And if the relationship never went bad, you wouldn't have a happy marriage 20 years later and be talking about, oh, you were love bombing me because things didn't go bad. So a lot of times it's not until things fall apart and then we look back and we're trying to figure out why did these things go wrong in this relationship. And then it always seems to start with love bombing as one of the red flags that we should have been watching for. Are there other red flags, like if someone maybe feels something's going too fast, or what can people look for to understand maybe I should slow down a little bit here?
Yeah, I mean, love bombing is a telltale sign that the person is being predatory, you know? I think people tend to love bomb because they know that it works to hook people in. They know that if I love bomb this person, they're going to love me back quickly and fast because they want fast results. They want to feel loved immediately. So they're going to try to basically force you in a very, very highly suggestive way to get you to feel that way. The other part is, you know, how intensely they share their feelings and emotions. If they share their life with you too fast, that's a red flag. Why are you sharing your life with me that fast? You know, let's talk about, you know, other things in life. I don't need to know your trauma. I don't need to know your problems. But again, it goes back into that perceived notion of like, this is a deep relationship, this is a fantasy, you're sharing all these things. So it's like, again, if they start going too fast and sharing too much, then this is already becoming a toxic environment. And a lot of times people just need to connect and just write about their life and write about what they're doing and what their hobbies are and, you know, some light conversation about their life and slowly but surely start getting into some of the issues. But if it starts immediately, then that's probably going to end up in an explosion later.
It's tough because one of the cool things about writing letters when you have a pen pal, which is like almost unheard of now because everyone's just texting a few words on, you know, on a phone now. But writing a handwritten letter with a pen and paper, it just feels more intimate from the start, right? It feels like you're sharing your heart and soul with somebody. And you can really get deeper about who you are. But I feel like at some point, it almost turns into feeling like you're doing this free therapy with this person. They always tell people, you know, write in a journal, write your thoughts out. But you never really want a journal because no one ever's going to read it. And you're like, is this worth actually writing all this just for myself? People think if there's an audience, I can share this. And maybe that would go back to the whole, you know, the trauma bond and the past trauma. Wanting, you know, someone to connect. Mm-hmm. By nature with this handwritten letter, it's encouraging you in your mind at least to really open up and put your whole world on the page. And the fact you haven't met this person, the fact, like you said earlier, it's safer. Sometimes like with a stranger, right? It's easier with a stranger to talk about all of your secrets and stuff you couldn't tell your own husband or wife or mom or dad or sister.
Right. And they think that talking about it to someone else who, quote unquote, understands and loves them, that's going to heal them. And it absolutely does not. There's a way out of this. You got to get out of the loop. Because the loop is going to be the thing that helps people really make true relationships if they really work at it. You know, relationships can happen anywhere. And as long as there's healthy understanding about it, it can become the real hope that they need. It can become that place where they do truly feel safe. It is a real safety, not a perceived one.
I talk about this like from you know, the inmate getting love bombed by the free world people, but I know it happens at the same amount, maybe even more the other way around, where the person in prison is, you know, sending gifts, little handmade jewelry items and saying similar things. And so this can kind of help both sides of the equation here figure out what's going on. But if someone's starting to feel like, you know, they've heard our conversation here today and they're seeing some of these red flags, what should people do? Obviously, slow down a little, but then how do they do that? And how do they convey that to their partner, right, without upsetting them?
So the first one is reality-based conversations. Because prison relationships can become idealized very quickly. Both partners need to be honest about the conversations about real-life challenges after release. Work, finances, housing, personal habits should be discussed openly. Who they really are as people, the messiness, the things that they are not really great at emotionally. You know, they can be honest, like, listen, I don't like conflict and I'm going to walk away. I got to work on that. When both people set realistic expectations around money, emotional support, communication frequency, and long-term plans, without boundaries, you know, one partner can feel drained or used. So boundaries is like, again, this is what I need, this is what I want, this is how, you know, this is what I would like to have as a relationship. And if the love bonding starts in, that's a boundary. And hey, you know, listen, I like you, I think you're great, but also I think we need to slow down. You know, like, I want to get to know you in a different way. So that allows for personal growth for both partners. It allows for working on change through education, therapy programs, vocational training, rehabilitation programs. The outside partner should maintain your own life and friendship and goals, but they also should go to therapy as well. Like, how can I have a relationship with this person who I really feel is a great person? But what boundaries can I do? Like, how can I be honest about, you know, who I am, and how can I trust what they're saying, and vice versa? You know, there's counseling in prison.
They'd have to want to go. It's one of those things. I always try to force people to go to therapy, and that's never going to happen, right? So they have to actually, in their heart, want to change. You drag them to the water or whatever, but they're not drinking it. You know what I mean?
I think people have a perceived notion of therapy. I'm going to talk to a stranger that doesn't know me. And I think that's, again, that trauma bond. It's like, I can't trauma bond with this person because they're going to see me who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reality is that it's more about what you're doing is not working. It hasn't worked. It's not about, like, ongoing, like, if a client comes to me, I'm going to understand your whole life, but I'm not here to bond with you. I'm here to help understand who you are and help understand how to get you to understand what you're doing and how you can get out of it. You know, it's almost like you're revamping your life and strategizing to get out of the loop that you're in. And a person who has the ability to do that is sitting in the next room and saying, hey, I can help you get out of this loop.
Is there, like, a proven link between people who have had significant trauma in their life and then they end up with one of these cluster B personality disorders?
Yeah. Trauma does enormous types of damage in the human mind. A lot of these disorders are designed originally for protective factors. So take a borderline. They have a high level of, you know, suicidal ideation, you know, just tumultuous relationships. They're very unstable, can't hold relationships, jobs, friendships. But the instability is because their high level of trauma and their high level of fear, anxiety, attachment issues is so erratic that their nervous system is a science. The nervous system is unable to regulate when stress happens. And borderline personality disorders, narcissistic personality disorders, any cluster B, or just major diagnosis, bipolar, depression, anxiety, these are all the illnesses of our mind. And then when those illnesses start to happen, our nervous system starts to react to that illness. So it becomes sick. Like anything else, yeah. Your body feels bad. If you notice that people who are depressed or anxious or have all these issues, their body hurts a lot. They have chronic pain. They have headaches all the time. Because your body is responding to all of that nervous system breakdown. And so when you heal the mind and you start dealing with the body issues, the body starts to relax and a lot of the symptomology actually just dissipates.
In Anthony's case, I mean, it went so far as his wife had told him that she had his children. That turned out to be not even true at all. The relationship ended, but even with something so huge, like major, major lies about almost everything throughout their entire relationship, he still wanted to get her back, and they still got back together, and then it fell apart again, and then they got back together again. Why is it so likely that, I mean, even after someone completely does you wrong and you realize they've lied and hurt you in so many profound ways, what is it that would make a person think, oh, maybe she just had a bad day and maybe she just needs a little help and I feel bad, I don't want to leave her? Is that just the bond aspect of it?
It goes back to the beginning of this, is the idealization and the fantasy. Oh, but I remember how they made me feel. I remember when they made me laugh. I remember when they were nice to me and they loved me. I want to go back to that again. They're not going back to the person. They're going back to when they made them feel good. I want that back. And you gave it to me, so I'm going to go back to you. So they're not even perceiving it as, I want to go back to this person who hurt me. It's not as simple. It's more deeper than, hey, this person saw me and seen and understood me. I want to go back to that. I'm going to try to see if I can dig that back out again. And that's what they're doing. They're trying to dig it back out again. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep getting hurt. But hey, hang on. That existed. So there must be in there.
Yeah, man, I've been there. I understand that in my mind. I mean, that's happened to me in my mind. And I've thought those exact same thoughts. In a way, it's scary how real that is, because I feel like you're not actually, a lot of times you're not actually in love with that person at all. You're just in love with the idea of who you thought they were, or who they could have been, or who they might have been earlier on in the relationship. And yeah, you're hanging on to that hope. And it goes back to that hope again. Maybe these horrible things they did, it's just a blip on the radar, and they're going to get back to that again.
When we look at it from a vantage point, is that that person is going to come back again. That person is going to do things differently. They're going to love me again. I want to shift the conversation back to the I statement. I want to feel that way. I want them to see me again. I want them to do this for me. I want to be the one to have these conversations. It's not about them. It's about you. It's about what you want. It's about what you need. It's about how you want to feel. And you're using that other person, in a sense, to try to get that back. When in reality, you should do it for yourself.
Right.
When you start doing it for yourself, self-actualization happens and people don't become that powerful sense of need. Okay. When you start to do it for you, you don't need external validation anymore. If they start acting out, you're going to be like, what is this? I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
And you truly stop doing it.
Yeah.
And then you don't seek it out anymore. You're like, I don't need this.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And then hopefully the next time you recognize some of the things from that relationship and you know what to avoid for your next one, but hopefully you're not rushing into that next one right away. Step back a little, take some time. If something goes wrong, let's say the relationship just abruptly ends. Let's say someone you've written for 3 years, one day they just write and say, I'm not writing you anymore, goodbye. And you feel, you know, rejected and hurt and sad and angry, all these things. What's the first step? I mean, a lot of people, they just, let me find somebody new and get my mind off it, or, you know, using alcohol or drugs or whatnot. But what should somebody do?
I mean, the first thing to do is, you have to deal with that grief and loss. My grief and loss comes from years and years and years of abandonment and people just giving up on you. And that's not something to ignore. And you can't ignore it. Being in another relationship is not going to make it go away. It just makes it bigger. And so every time you decide you're going to get into another relationship, you're just making the previous problem into the next problem. And then that problem now is compounding with the previous problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you start looking at it more like, okay, this is a real thing. Let me look at it. It's not as scary. You know, it's like, it's just a thing that you have to look at, and now you get to fix it. And now you're like, oh, okay, this feels good. I'm going to do things better now. And people really think that looking at trauma is scary. It really is just kind of going back in time and just talking about it and realizing, oh my God, this is my life. And this is what happened. I had a client who never talked about their trauma. And then just one day just decided, I'm going to talk about it with me, and talked about it. He then went to his wife and talked about it with her. And she said, I've never heard you talk about this. He goes, yeah, you know what I came to realize that my life was really difficult because of my parents. And I really understand now why I am the way I am. And I honestly, I said mostly nothing in that session. He just talked about it.
Wow.
And then talking about it had him realize so many things about himself. And he walked away thinking, wow, that was a great session. I'm like, wow, I said nothing.
Wow. That's so great to hear. I mean, it's so great when things can get, you know, can improve and people can feel better. That's what I think we're shooting for here, just wanting to help everybody. I'll tell you, I know we're getting short here on time, but a mistake that I made, and I just want to put this out there too, when you have a relationship with somebody who might have one of these cluster B disorders and things are starting to fall apart. I spent years probably reading every book that was ever written on borderline, on narcissistic personality disorder. And then I realized at one point, I've spent years trying to understand why the relationship went bad, trying to understand what was in this other person's head, why they did the things they did. But in those years, I wasn't at all focused on me, you know? So when you're mm-hmm. spent, and I think we have a tendency because it's so confusing sometimes, and you're like, how could this happen? Why mm-hmm. could this happen? You just want to figure out what's going on in the other person's head, and you're stuck mm-hmm. there, and you can't get into like, what do I do to fix myself? Because those books are teaching you like red flags and what to watch for with a borderline and all these things, but not about what you should actually do. So that's, I feel for me, that was one of my big mistakes in that process.
I mean, it's a natural mistake. You always want to think, what did that person do? What were they thinking? How did this happen? I had by the way, it happens in friendships too. You can lose friendships. And, you know, there was a couple that I lost. And surprising, I know. How can you not want to be my friend?
Unfathomable. Hard to figure out, yeah.
when it happened, you know, I immediately went to, at first, like any human, what happened? What were they thinking? How can they have done this? You know, but then I changed the conversation rather quickly and said, what did I do? Not blaming, but like, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. What was about me that got me into a relationship that really wasn't fulfilling? Because it wasn't.
Right.
And that's what really transformed the conversation was when I asked, why did I stay in this relationship for as long as it did? Because it did end. But how did it end? Well, it ended because a long time ago, before the end happened, they were not supportive and I allowed it. They were mean and I allowed it. They were not very good friends and I allowed it. I allowed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I allowed it, that degradation of that relationship just kept happening. And then a surprise, it ended. But it's not a surprise. It was always going to end. But I had to come to terms with, I made that choice of being friends with them in the beginning. And I shouldn't have, because that was my need to want to feel validated. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to have these kind of people in my life anymore. I'm good.
You got to, mm-hmm. at some point, put your foot down. And because otherwise, you'll just waffle. You can waffle back and forth for years of your life and get stuck in that cycle. Before we go, just for a minute, I have to ask you about this, because this to me is crazy when I learned about this huge thing with these prison relationships now, and you see this everywhere on Facebook. They call it a loyalty test. And we actually have Kayla from California. We found her in a Facebook, Are You Dating My Inmate Prison Pen Pal group. Kayla could explain the loyalty test better than I can. Go ahead, Kayla.
Yeah, so a loyalty test is a lot of these guys are just, sometimes they're just talking to multiple girls so that they can have money put on their books. So in order for us to feel like we're not being played, we'll have someone else message them to see if they say, oh no, I have a girlfriend, or oh no, I'm married. Then that person will send us the screenshots.
So is this like a normal, would you say more people do this than not do it?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of us do it. Okay. And then a lot of us do it for each other.
Okay, so it's like a camaraderie there in the groups on Facebook, where you can kind of like, hey, you help me out, I'll help you out. We'll each do a loyalty test.
Yeah.
Do the guys ever figure out what's going on? Does it ever seem suspicious or weird? And do they ever, you know, call people out on it and be like, hey, why are you doing this? You don't trust me.
Yeah, sometimes they do. I know I've done a loyalty test for someone else, and he had asked her if she was the one who sent me. And then I told her, just change the subject.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so sometimes they do catch on.
Now, so I'm thinking like, so we're going to get this loyalty test, like let's pretend we're going to do one now and I need you to test my wife and make sure she's loyal to me. If they're not on a pen pal site, so they're going to wonder like, how the hell did this girl find me, right? So do you, ahead of time, is there like a planning session where you're like, okay, here's the story. You tell him that you were friends with him. How does that go down?
So we say it's an accidental ad that we were actually looking for someone else.
Oh.
And we added them by accident. And then we're like, well, since I'm here, and then we just start talking to them.
Do they ever send like sexy pictures to the guy to kind of tempt him even more?
Not the ones that I've seen. I know there are some girls that try to take your man. So you got to be careful with who you ask to do it for you.
That would be like really bad karma, huh? If they end up actually with the guy. Has that actually happened, that someone you know of?
In the groups it has.
You got it.
This girl was messaging other people's men and was trying to take them from them.
Pretty soon you'll be doing loyalty tests within your own group. Thanks, Kayla, for letting us know about loyalty tests. We appreciate your time today.
Of course. Bye.
Jennifer Garcia, what are your thoughts?
Well, first, check with yourself and say, why do I need a loyalty test for? What is that doing for me? You know, what am I looking for truly? If I'm going to test the loyalty and then I'm going to ask my friend to go do that, then first of all, challenge the friend. Why are you even going to do this for me? This is not healthy. But then let's say you go all the way through it. But before you even try, ask yourself, what am I really looking for? What kind of loyalty am I looking for entirely in a human being? And why do I need to test it? Who in my life has not been loyal to me? Most likely mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
You're already creating a distrust already in yourself. Not them, you. You're already creating a distrust. You're damaging you by just doing the action. The drama infuses with our nervous system. Our nervous system shoots up and goes into a fight or flight response. I'm going to give you a little insight here. You know that we can become addicted to our own body functions and dopamine receptors. Fight and flight responses have norepinephrine and dopamine, highly very addictive chemicals in our brain.
Mm.
So we have to have these kinds of experiences in order for us to get quote unquote these hits. So a lot of times people are just addicted to the drama. They're doing things to infuse. They don't know they're doing this, by the way, but I'm hoping your listeners really get this.
Yeah.
You're looking for a good way to make yourself feel validated. This isn't about them. This is about you. Listen to you first. Before you ask your friend, before you get that validation that he is or isn't trustworthy, that's not what trust is. You know what trust is? Trust is like communication. Trust is like, are you going to be there for me consistently? Trust is, when I'm sick, are you going to take care of me? Trust is, are you going to hurt me? Trust is, are you going to gaslight me or not?
Yeah,
you know, are you going to tell me the truth?
Not
that's what trust is. It's not sending my friends to see if they're going to cheat. I promise you, that's not going to do anything. So don't try it, because it will prove absolutely nothing. You need more than that. You deserve more than that. You require more than that. So stop chasing something that's not even going to give you what you need as a woman.
Fascinating stuff. Jennifer Garcia, gratitude and growth counseling. How can people find you if they've heard all of your insights today and they're thinking, oh, maybe she could help me too? Where should people go to find you?
I'm in Florida, so it's going to be difficult for me to do kind of trauma therapy, but I can do, if you're in another state, trauma-informed life coaching. So like coaching you through some of these issues, coaching you through some of the things that you are dealing with. And I'm going to give you that link right now.
All right.
Give me 2 seconds. It's Linktree, linktr.ee/gratitude-and-growth-counseling. And you'll see my page. You'll be able to make a consult. You're welcome to look around. I had a lot of education. And if you have any questions, go ahead and contact me. I'm happy to do a consult with you. If you'd like some help, I can get you where you need to be with a healthy, happy, loving relationship.
So it's linktr.ee/gratitude-and-growth-counseling.
Yep.
And Jennifer Garcia, it's been so great to have your thoughts and everything. I feel like I should pay you my copay or something, at least for all the assistance you've given me and everybody here today on the podcast.
But yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
In a cell where the shadows creep, a man alone, lost in dreams so deep, signed up for love, a hope I could find. A pen pal from Dakota, she captured my mind. Every letter a secret, every word so sweet. I felt like a king when I read what she'd speak. Hours on the phone, my heart took flight. In the darkness of prison, she brought me the light. Oh, my ride or die, my one and only. With every word you wrote, you never left me lonely. We shared every tear, every laugh, every sigh. I thought we had it all. We aimed for the sky, but the said you were pregnant with twins on the way. A family I dreamed of, I'd work night and day. Grew up in foster care, no love to be found. You painted a picture, the sweetest sound. When the babies arrived, my heart felt alive. But the joy turned to ashes, no reason to thrive. Oh, my ride or die, my one and only. With every word you wrote, you never left me lonely. We shared every tear, every laugh, every sigh. I thought we had it all. We aimed for the sky, but the truth came crashing like a thunderstorm. In my heart, I believed, oh, how could it be wrong? The therapist said, cruel twist of fate, personality disorders, pulling love from hate, childhood trauma, escaping your pain. You built up a fantasy, I'm left with disdain. Why did you lie? Why'd you weave that thread? The dreams I was holding, they crumbled instead. Each picture you sent, like knives in my heart, you painted a world. But it fell apart. Oh, my ride or die, my one and only. With every word you wrote, you never left me lonely. We shared every tear, every laugh, every sigh. I thought we had it all. We aimed for the sky, but the truth came crashing like a thunderstorm. Your dear nurse, in this cold, lonely place, your memory haunts me. I can't escape your face. Was it all just a fantasy? My heart on a line in this prison of sorrow. I wish you were mine.
To be a guest on our show, email podcast@penpals.buzz. Or call 888-2-PENPAL.